As corporate travel continues to evolve, the ability to adapt quickly is no longer a competitive advantage, it's a necessity. Corporate travel is entering a new stage of complexity, and business as usual is simply no longer an option. In this special episode of Your Window Seat, we're sharing excerpts from our recent In the Know webinar with BTN. Moderator Tracy Carrillo leads a deep dive into two pivotal themes: policy agility and traveler experience management, and the shift towards deglobalization. First, we'll move beyond standard policy approaches to show you how to operationalize flexible travel policies. We'll explore how personas, stakeholder alignment, and internal buy-in all play a role in shaping policies that work in the real world, not just on paper. First, we'll move beyond standard policy approaches to show you how to operationalize flexible travel policies. We'll explore how personas, stakeholder alignment, and internal buy-in all play a role in shaping policies that work in the real world, not just on paper. Then, we'll tackle how deglobalization is reshaping the way organizations approach travel strategy. For years, the gold standard was a single, centralized TMC model. While that model has its perks, it doesn't always reflect the realities of today's environment. We'll discuss how deglobalizing your service and support model can actually create greater flexibility, stronger regional alignment, and more effective outcomes on the ground. With guidance from experienced industry leaders, you'll walk away with clear, actionable steps to balance global standards with local needs while elevating the traveler experience. Let's dive in.
Hi, welcome to everybody here joining us for this In the Know webinar. I'm Tracy Carrillo, Senior Vice President of Marketing and Global Sales for Travel Incorporated. I've been in the industry for well over 25 years. Love everything there is about this changing environment. Today is a little bit of a treat because we're actually tackling two travel tending topics. The first being how to build flexibility into your travel program. But we're not only going to talk about it from a conceptual perspective, we're actually going to put in practical applications to show you how you can accomplish this. This will be followed by a discussion on when it makes sense to consider deglobalizing your travel program. Now, both of these topics will hit on the impact to you, the travel manager, as well as the satisfaction levels of your travelers. We're going to talk about personas. We're going to talk about who you need to get buy-in for your programs. But most importantly, we're going to talk to you about how you can accomplish this. So I'm thrilled today to be joined by three subject matter specialists. I'd love them to introduce themselves directly. We'll start with Chad, then we'll go into Charles, followed by Sherry.
Hello, everyone. My name is Chad Ish. I am the Global Category Manager here at AGCO, and I've been managing travel for quite a few times in my life. This is the third time, and happy to be with y'all today.
Hi, I'm Charlie Macrack. I'm Senior Vice President for North America for Arika Consulting. Arika Consulting is a buyer-focused travel consultancy that focuses in on helping our clientele make the best set of tactical, strategic, and implementation decisions. And delighted to be here with this group.
And hi, I'm Sherry Gagliano, and I'm really glad to be here today. I lead online travel services at Travel Incorporated, where I focus on client implementations and shaping effective online booking strategies. A big part of what I do is finding practical, innovative solutions that truly work, not just in theory, but in day-to-day operations. To me, that's what really makes an online booking strategy successful. I've been in the travel industry for nearly four decades, and during that time, I've had the opportunity to guide teams through significant change and growth. I also oversee the support, our online support team, ensuring they have the tools and training needed to deliver a great experience. At the end of the day, I'm focused on keeping the customer experience front and center and finding ways to continuously improve it. I'm really looking forward to the conversation.
Thanks, Sherry, and thanks, Chad and Charles. I'm going to start with Charles because Arika has this motto, imagine a better way. I love that because I think we all know that change isn't an option, it's a necessity. We no longer have that option to adapt But what we do is we experience a pause. And sometimes we're paralyzed because we just don't know how to get things started. So today, the goal is to shift the mindset from paralyzed to empowered by looking at tangible, practical ways to accomplish this through our partnerships. So let's dive into the first topic, building a flexible travel policy. Charles, we hear the word flexibility all the time, but what are the actual drivers? You know, what is this? Why is it the shift right now? And more importantly, how does this directly impact the bottom line of traveler satisfaction?
Sure. Well, great question. Why build a flexible policy? Really stems from travelers have more choices than ever before now and where they can book their travel, whether that's in your program or outside. That said, you need to be able to meet the traveler's needs in order to get them to book within your TMC channel, as hard mandates are rare and difficult to enforce going forward. To meet traveler needs, you need to recognize that one size travel policy rarely meets all traveler needs. There are different types of travelers that you need to be aware of. We call those personas. They all travel for different reasons. There are road warriors like salespeople and customer service reps and technicians who travel constantly. So you want to make their travel easier and less burdensome as they're focusing in on the reason why they're traveling. Executives are who are meeting with customers, suppliers, and investors need to have a degree of flexibility in their travel as they change a lot, as the needs of the operational business typically will interrupt their travel plans. If you look at other personas within the organization, you have employees who are traveling for an internal meeting or an external meeting. So again, you need to have a policy that reflects those types of requirements. And then you have job candidates who you're trying to impress as you bring them in for a set of interviews. You want to manage them and their travel experience differently than you would a typical employee. Then lastly, you may have crews or maintenance workers who travel to support the operations of your customers' businesses. And with that, need to be dispatched quickly and efficiently. So your travel policy needs to reflect the different nuances and different requirements of each type of traveler. By forcing one size fits all approach to your travelers, it's going to result in undue friction in the performance of the jobs that they're being paid to do, resulting potentially for driving people offline for their bookings, or worse, forcing them to travel under a policy that creates a lot of friction and can actually be a driver for unplanned attrition as well as turnover.
So, Charles, I'm going to step in for a second here because, you know, we've looked at a couple of slides and we were talking about the different demographics, different age, different approaches to work. And with so many more of the Gen Zs having less loyalty and they tend to change roles more, one of the areas that I'm really wanted to do a little bit of math on in advance of this presentation was around losing a top performer. So when we think about losing a top performer, and let's take a very conservative baseline salary of, let's say, $90,000. If we lose one of these top performers because they are just fed up with travel, they just don't like the policy, they feel like they're restricted, the cost to that company can be three times plus their salary. Now, think about it. You've got the recruiters, you've got internal resources with HR and other components, you know, kind of evaluating. Then you have the training, the onboarding. You have that individual's manager's time to get them really to understand the value of what you're delivering as a company. And then you have that loss of the company revenue for 6 months. Now, we are all highly fiscally responsible, and we can only imagine what $300,000 would do to our travel budgets, let alone to the company's bottom line. So I think it's really important to be thinking about how policy needs to be attentive to where the company is growing their business. And I'd also like to hear from you on what other elements, you know, are important for travel managers and procurement managers to be thinking about on why the flexible policy is so important.
Great points, Tracy. I would say that, you know, that's the cost of, you know, the one size fits all policy. It can create a ton of friction that ultimately drives people out of the organization. So again, this persona-based approach, I think, addresses that. The other dimension to look at is also, you know, the age group of the set of travelers that you're working with. You know, millennials and Gen Z have very different approaches to how they engage in any kind of corporate set of requirements and procedures. And with that, that's a dimension that you could add to the persona component. The other thing to think about is also, where are you from a travel management perspective in terms of where you sit on the travel management maturity curve? And what I mean by that is, where are you on the journey of managing your travel? If you're just starting out, you do not want to put a policy in place that has lots of restrictions and rules, because the travelers who are coming from an unmanaged to a managed environment are going to spit the bit. And so with that, we're suggesting that make the policy rules light and easy to get them used to booking on your prescribed channel, and then use your reporting to be able to analyze how well are they spending the company's money and making some adjustments with different policy groups as a result of what you learn from the reporting after you've got people onboarded and using your managed channel on a frequent basis.
Okay, so now let's go into some practical application. So staying with you, Charles, before we move over to Sherry, how do we start making that business case? We know what we want to do, but we have to build that ROI to get it over the line. What are the first steps for you?
I would say first start with an assessment of your program today. And that it's really being able to get an understanding of what's your level of compliance today. Is there significant leakage that you're seeing? How mature is your program in terms of where you are on that travel management maturity curve? And then gather your insights and metrics around the types of personas that you have inside your organization. Next, once you have an understanding of those personas and where the potential friction points are in your program, then engage with those different persona types within your organization to start gaining their feedback, asking them what's working, what's not working, and what flexibility they need in terms of how they go about traveling on behalf of the organization. I would then say, gather your stakeholders, work with finance and HR and other key stakeholders on recommendations of on policy changes and rules of enforcement based upon what you have gathered through those previous steps. And then with that, begin to quantify and evaluate the cost and impact of the changes that you're recommending to gain acceptance. And then once you have that acceptance and implemented new policies, monitor and measure and adjust on a periodic basis.
So whether it's finance, HR, shared services, speaking to the travelers, and then having those stakeholders, those executive stakeholders. And I really think if we just use that same example that we did earlier about losing a top producer or wellness, if wellness factors is a real critical thing for your road warriors, get HR on board, but have the numbers, have the data to prove the story. So Charles, that was a great way to set the stage. What we'd like to do now is bring in Sherry. So now that we have the business case done, we know what we want to accomplish. How do we operationalize it? I mean, this is your specialty, making the online booking tool serve as your storyline to the traveler and to reduce the resource requirements, you know, approvals, any kind of other things that, you know, suck up the efficiency out of our daily lives from the travel management program. So Sherry, if you were to tackle some of these items that Charles just, you know, kind of set up for us, what would be your approach?
Well, first, I would think about using rule classes to reward those travelers. Each year, sales can provide a list of President's Club winners or your top performers. For road warriors, you could pull reporting to identify travelers booking, say, 40 to 60 plus hotel nights annually through preferred channels. And from there, you can assign them to a specific rule class that gives them a little extra flexibility, things like upgraded hotel rooms or allowing premium economy fares as a standard. It not only makes travel more comfortable for your high frequency travelers, but it also helps drive compliance, especially on hotels where we tend to see the most leakage, and it reduces the need for approvals. The second area I'd look at is refundable tickets versus unused tickets. What we often see is that many cancellations, especially in sales, happen even when trips were booked in policy and in advance. Plans change, clients reschedule, and now you're left managing unused tickets. At that point, it really becomes a math exercise. You compare the cost of those unused and sometimes expired tickets against the incremental cost of allowing fully refundable fares for certain travelers. In many cases, there's actually found money there. If your unused ticket program isn't tight, companies can lose anywhere from 5 to 11% of their total airspend. So at 5 million annual airspend, that's nearly $500,000. So for travelers or departments with a high rate of cancellations, you could allow refundable fares through a rule class. Now, when you run the numbers, it often ends up being more cost effective than absorbing the loss of unused tickets. Now, I'm not saying only book refundable fares, because sometimes booking a non-refundable fare is the best choice. So work with your account managers, leverage the data of your travel spend, and use rule classes that permit refundable fares when it makes sense.
Awesome. You know, Charles, do you have anything to add? Exclamation point to those two items before we talk about a couple of other areas. I think you're on mute.
I said, I think Sherry is absolutely spot on making those two key points in terms of being able to make policy changes. So A, you are protecting the company's assets, those non-refundable tickets, and reusing them, but also, again, creating less friction on behalf of the travelers.
So, I mean, you've got that combination of, you know, I just love these two examples because, you know, we're really responding back to what we had just talked about, loyalty, lack of loyalty, wellness, care of your people, so that, you know, they appreciate your company and everything you do for them. So the other thing I like about that is that it's not a heavy lift. I mean, this is, if you have somebody, you know, you have a team in your travel management company, like we do at TI with our online travel services, they put these in action for you. You know, you work with your account managers, your client success managers to run the numbers, identify the individuals, figure out the rule class, and then hand it over to an online travel services team that once a year they can make those changes. Then you have the data at that point to measure, monitor, evaluate, and then take another look at it. Has this been successful? What impact has this done for my traveler loyalty and retention? And how has this impacted my budget while maintaining that control? So fabulous. You know, I also want to think about the demographic of those travelers when they really are appreciating the experience. So there is a lot of talk about leisure continues, and we've heard about it for 20 years, you know, business, leisure, combining it. And one of the easiest ways is combining the trip over a weekend and potentially having the company pay for that hotel. So it's a perk to those travelers. They get to experience a city they wouldn't be able to go to with least personal cost of that time. They cover their meals and whatever entertainment, but that hotel cost would be covered by the company, increasing their hotel nights and leveraging their spend for negotiated rates. So Charles, is that something that you think is relevant, or you think there's other ways to accomplish it, or what are your thoughts?
No, I think, you know, we see that all the time in the marketplace. It's a very common approach on being able to, A, reduce friction on the traveler. So what you're doing in that case is instead of taking a return flight home on a Friday and then having to turn around and go out on Monday, what you're doing is you're reducing that trip and the friction that comes with it. The other aspect is, if you look at it mathematically, you know, that cost of reimbursing that hotel cost should be lower than what an additional airfare would cost. So it benefits the organization, it benefits the traveler, and it reduces the friction for both concerned.
You know, we also think about, you know, we've talked about wellness. You know, it's true, whether it's mental, physical, just feeling comfortable and confident after those trips so that we can put our best foot forward for our companies. It's so important. And I think this actually carries over to these long haul flights for our international travelers. And so I'm going to bring back Sherry for this last topic on, you know, what's a best practice to remind travelers of what the policy offers at the time of search?
Well, this is actually a great use case for policy-driven messaging in the online booking tool. From an operational standpoint, you could set up a condition like flights over a certain duration, say 8 hours, and then trigger a message that encourages the traveler to arrive a day earlier. It's positioned as a benefit, helping them to be rested and ready for the next day. You could also pair that with policy flexibility, like allowing the additional hotel night if it's with preferred properties or overall trip parameters. So it's not just a suggestion, it's supported by the policy. It's a really simple way to promote better traveler wellness and trip effectiveness without adding a lot of administrative overhead.
I really do appreciate that, because one of the questions that came in was about how do you control a flexible travel program? I mean, this is a very real, simplistic way to control it and to respond to what the travelers have told you about what they would like to see built into the policy. So when I think about how each of these opportunities can relatively easily be built into your online booking tool after you have the data, it just makes incredible impact to the individual. But it also, when using some of that data that you only count those hotel nights that were from your preferred, you know, supplier or your preferred tools, your TMC or your online booking tool, you're going to be driving that hotel adoption for those road warriors to get that 40 to 60% so they can get those upgrades. So that's where your policy comes in. That's where your, you know, your compliance comes in. And it actually takes a shift in the mindset from travel management to traveler experience management. So I'm going to let that sit there for a second, because at Travel Incorporated, we're always trying to find efficiencies. We're trying to find new ways to think and to actually create the efficiencies. So if you have a happy traveler, you're likely going to have a happy travel manager. I think we can all agree to that. So Sherry, thank you, you know, for your points on that. Okay, so now we're going to pivot to our second topic of the day, and that's deglobalization. We often think deglobalization or global travel programs is about uniformity, you know, having a single TMC, so I have everything all in one place and everything's perfect. Well, you know, that really isn't always the case. There are certain situations where, of course, there's benefits to that, and you have some handoffs on the benefits versus some of the challenges. But in today's environment, there are some truth factors that come up to when deglobalizing your travel management company service and support model makes a lot of sense. So with that being said, I really look to Charles for setting the stage on this. You're dealing with this all the time at Eureka Consulting. So talk to us a little bit about the why, the what, when, and how to deglobalize your program.
Sure. Well, first off, we believe that deglobalization is really not a strategy, but really a correction mechanism when a fully global model stops delivering on its value. In practice, companies move away from a single global TMC for three structural reasons. The first is market reality. In regions like China or parts of LATAM, local players still provide better access to content, payment solutions, and servicing capabilities than some of the global TMCs. Second, performance and specialization. A single provider rarely excels everywhere. Introducing a second or a third TMC, whether regionally or by function, can improve outcomes. But but only if it's done with a clear performance accountability and an understanding of the volume allocation logic behind it. Thirdly, innovation and ecosystem evolution. This market is changing dramatically and shifting constantly. New players, platforms, and current content models are emerging, and they don't always fit within a single global TMC structure. That said, there are critical distinctions to think about as you are evaluating a deglobalization decision. You can globalize what we call the delivery layer. That's the TMC layer, but you should not fragment the control layer, meaning the heart and guts of the program, including your reporting, your travel policy, your duty of care components, and the like, and especially the data. Data must remain globally governed. A single data architecture is essential to maintain visibility, compliance, and decision-making integrity. And importantly, this is not without trade-offs. A multi-TMC model introduces complexity, potentially higher costs, fragmented service experience, and weaker supplier leverage if it's not carefully managed. So the real business case is to determine what is your unique situation and to make a decision based upon some of the criteria I've talked about. Companies should not move to a deglobalized model when the incremental value from local optimization or competition clearly exceeds the additional complexity and governance burden that will come along with it. What we are increasingly seeing in the marketplace is not full deglobalization, but a shift toward hybrid models. Global control with selective regional or functional flexibility whenever possible and demonstrated.
And that couldn't be a more perfect bridge as we introduce Chad Ish at ADCO. So Chad, you have had quite the journey that you continue to be on for the last few years, and you have done an absolutely remarkable job of deglobalizing, instead of going from one to more, going from many to a few. And so without stealing your thunder, talk us through, what does ADCO do? What is the reality of your travel program? And what has been your approach?
Sure. Thanks, Tracy. And a lot of the stuff that Charles was talking about totally resonates with what we have going on here at ADCO. So ADCO is an agricultural company. We do have a global footprint. Our headquarters is in Duluth, Georgia, but we have operations throughout the world, Mexico, Brazil, Argentina, all throughout Europe, Finland, Germany, France, Italy, offices in Switzerland, Budapest, India, manufacturing operations in China, offices in Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, South Africa, and I'm sure there's a few that I've forgotten throughout that. But what we found is that a global TMC would not work for us for a lot of the points that Charles had brought up, being that there are regional aspects with China that he specifically brought up, as well as some of the other areas that we have in Brazil. So what we were able to do is to consolidate those TMCs within the regions, as we have been speaking about. And just to talk a little bit about my role as well, is I said I'm a global category manager. That's not just for travel. It's for employee services, which encompasses contingent labor. And I work with our HR globally on RFPs, contracts, and such. So I wear many different hats throughout the day, travel being one of them, and travel being one that I like as well. But I needed to have TMCs that were able to efficiently run the business in the regions and be able to provide me the data that I need as well.
Wow. I think all of us jaws were dropping as you kind of ran through a little bit of the scale of what you've been dealing with. And, especially when you don't have the luxury of having that as your only category. You need support. So everybody's going to want to know, how did you do it? You know, where did it start? So let's go back. Let's start at the beginning. You know, in order to move forward, you always have to look back by understanding, where do you want to go? So talk to us a little bit about your thought process with this. What was not working, and how were you going to make changes towards that?
Yep. I think a prime example is our European market. So in our European market, we had, I want to say, 26 different TMCs within that market. And to try to manage 26 TMCs with getting hotel rates, airline rates, et cetera, uploaded was massive, as well as some of them didn't even have online booking tools. So it was just a manual call process with them. So what we were able to do specifically in the EME market was to consolidate that all down to one TMC. And that was a massive project, took about 4 years to finally complete. We had the last two countries come on board January of this year. That's just one example. I try not to look back too much because it's kind of scary, but that's one example that it was a success for us.
Excellent. You know, we have some questions that have come in and that deal with hotels. And so I'm going to actually kind of think back on both policy from, you know, a domestic side as well as international policy. And, you know, so how can you always promote your preferred properties? So let's, you know, from a domestic and the flexible side of the equation, I think that Sherry would agree that that's always going to be top of mind. And so by always preferencing your preferreds, even if you don't have a negotiated agreement because you want to get to a negotiated agreement, that's great. But then on the international side of it, on the deglobalization side of it, it's about really how leveraging that spend. Whether it's hotel, whether it's air, whether it's ground transportation. So as you have taken all of those countries, and let's take EMEA because we know you still have APAC and the Americas, what was your thoughts on hotel optimization for preferred and leveraging both hotels and your air contracts by consolidating all of those countries to a BCD, I think it's BCD that you use for that region.
Yeah, so what we were able to do actually was by leveraging that, it makes our hotel RFP a lot easier because we have the data that we can pull out of one system. We obviously mark in the OBTs, we mark most preferred in such. A lot of the hotel chains, we do get chain-wide discounts. Some of them, we have enough room nights that we're able to negotiate rates. We are also able to leverage booking.com for some of the smaller locations that don't use the GDS systems. So we're still able to take and leverage our online booking tool to capture those. But that's been monumental. We're doing a lot better on the hotel RFP, but we still have a road to go because of the fact is that bringing more of the people in, we're gathering more of the data to be able to consolidate that and making sure that we are approaching the right hotels to get negotiated rates.
And I really look forward to that being a separate webinar topic on international hotel sourcing. Because I think there's a lot that can be shared with new technology providers like, you know, B2B automation and others for continuous sourcing that really add a very different way of managing your programs. But let's go into some of the non-negotiables. So you've consolidated EMEA, you have APAC, and then you have the Americas, and I believe you're in the process with maybe one country right now that you're out to RFP on. What are some of those non-negotiables, whether they are in place or part of that journey that you know you need to have as you complete all of this, because you are never going to get the budget for everything that you need on day one, let alone day four, let alone year five. But you know you need it. You have to continue to build those business cases. So what are those non-negotiables? And then how do you function effectively as you, you know, kind of bring them into the program?
Yep, I would say from a number one perspective, you've got to remember that this is a journey. So I talked about the EME rollout taking 4 years. This is a long process for us. Some of you may say, wow, you did that in 4 years. That's really quick. I wanted to do it quicker than that, but you can move as quick as the business is going. So part of it is remembering that it's a journey. You're going to have your ups and downs during the time, but keeping that in mind. The other thing is, if you can, and this is something that we're exploring, is use one of the TMCs as my global partner. And being able to leverage one of the TMCs to work with the other TMCs hand in hand. The second point that I would like to bring up is the data piece. So that was a total nightmare in our old platform. Sometimes we couldn't even get data, but having that data consolidation so that you can simplify, have one source of truth, have the same format when you're running reports. Right now, I'm currently running reports out of three different systems, but we are looking to do some data consolidation with one of our TMCs because they have a data warehouse. So we're in the process of exploring that and moving into that platform. It makes it a lot easier. I have senior executives saying, well, I really like the format of this one. Why can't you run it that way for one of the other regions? So it's going to simplify my life. And then the data also provides you the knowledge, the things that you need for budgets, the things that you need for negotiating with the suppliers, be it the airlines or the hotels and such. So data consolidation and journey are probably the two biggest things that come to mind for me.
Really appreciate that, because, Travel Incorporated is your domestic TMC, providing the capabilities for that data warehouse and that global account management. So we have seen it firsthand, all of the work that you've been able to accomplish. And being part of that journey as your partner there is something that's really exciting for us to help bring that load off of your plate and deliver what your executives are asking for. I want to talk about one other thing. I was listening to a webinar from BTN, I guess it was a week ago or so, and we hear it industry all the time that, deglobalizing is a heavy lift. Changing TMCs globally is a heavy lift. And I'm not minimizing that there's work to be said. It takes a while. It also takes focus, and it takes planning. So what advice would you give those that are saying, I don't have the bandwidth to do this? I don't know where to start. What is going to be my number one best practice to make sure I have in place?
Great question. So one of the things that I think about AGCO is our guiding principles that we have. So our guiding principles, there's three of them. One of them is a farmer first. The second one is speak up. And the third one is team up. Team up is the one that I rely heavily on when it comes to this, because I have to have the local buy-in. I have to have the people in the regions either having a champion for the region or something like that that's going to help me leverage this and get this program in place to the best of our abilities. So that's probably the biggest thing, is having the local advocates. And then what I like to say, and I've said this for many years in my life, is I like to take people along for the journey. So if you include stakeholders, if you include these local advocates at the beginning of the process, they feel like it's not happening to them, but it's happening with them, because they've had input throughout the process. They've been able to say, hey, what about this? What about that? And then when it comes down to, well, why are we getting this new TMC? From the questions that are coming in, the local advocates say, oh no, I've been working with Chad on that project for quite some time. Yeah, it's a global project. We're rolling this out. It helps to make the implementation so much easier when you have people going along for the ride rather than having it happen to them.
And I absolutely agree. I mean, I think it was like 5 years ago, we did a podcast about the myths of global programs and the most important things of having those regional advocates. Because they're the ones that need to talk to the travelers, the executive admins, the traveler admins, because of the culture plays such a big part of how travelers book and how to manage those control costs. Now, another question came in, and I'm going to ask Charles, I'm going to punt this one over to Charles, because, we do say, we're not saying don't use global travel management companies. I mean, Chad, you use American Express, I think, primarily over in Latin America and South America. BCD, I believe, in APAC and Europe. But, the question is, are global TMCs able to have regional partners for those areas where a global program doesn't make sense? That's a model they have seen previously. Charles, can you, speak to that a little bit?
Well, first off, there's not a one-size-fits-all in terms of how you go about managing your global program. And again, what it's all about understanding the nuances and requirements that each of your constituents have, whether those are the personas we talked about earlier today, or whether those are some of the regional considerations that need to be thought through. At the end of the day, it's all about ensuring that you're delivering the right set of services with the right content behind it, with the right set of governance behind it, to ensure that your travelers are traveling safely, efficiently, and effectively. So again, there's no one size fits all. It comes down to really understanding your program and your needs and tailoring accordingly. And yes, there are regional players that are part of larger TMCs. And again, you need to be able to mix and match what works best for your travelers, regardless of what the organizational structure looks like, as long as you're not abandoning that governance piece that I talked about earlier.
And to piggyback on that, it's also important when selecting a TMC in your RFP process for those international regions to understand, are those regional offices wholly owned? Are they joint ventures? What does that mean from a data consolidation? Are you getting the feeds? Are they getting the same experience? Or is it just about that local content? So there are regional players that have joint ventures, and there are regional players where the global TMC has acquired them. So those are very important RFP questions, I think, to ask when you're looking at those regions. But also, you know, remember, think about the impact. You know, if you have four travelers in this one country, you know, what is best for your overall program? And sometimes it's about, I want to have the same online booking tool everywhere, no matter what TMC. Other times it's like, I want to make sure I have the right content. And that includes tertiary hotels and regional, airlines that TMC will able to bring in, so you don't have to go outside your program. If it's about that consolidation of data, analytics of data, real-time duty of care for your travelers, you need to make sure that you can measure the changes that you're making. And we talked about buy-in, and we have a couple of minutes here, so I just want to go real quick to Charles and say, what other buy-in do we need, as we do this? What about internal stakeholders?
Yeah, I think, the typical stakeholder group includes HR and finance, as we've talked about today. There's a couple of other areas that I would suggest that travel managers engage if they haven't done so already. One is the audit function. Your internal audit is there to ensure that your company controls and are compliant, and the way people are operating are within those boundaries. So getting your audit team involved to an extent is another stakeholder I would recommend. The other is the chief security officer. Again, if you've got an international program, we all know what's going on in the geopolitical world today, is that if your chief security officer is not involved, you should get them involved. If you don't have a chief security officer, find out the person who is responsible for your business insurance, because they're looking at things from a risk and cost perspective. So add those to your constituency list, and I think you'll see the value that they bring to the table will be significant. They're also, when you have audit and security involved, making the shift and changing things, you now have folks involved who will help you make that happen, help you build the business case, and ensure that the company is following the prescribed set of rules that you set forth.
Excellent. Wow, we've covered a lot of ground today, all in 45 minutes. So again, thank you all for your time. We've talked about turning policy into a retention tool, thinking about the global service model. What's best for your travelers? How are we going to make those travelers happy, get the content they need, get the service model that's right for you, and then to be able to measure each one of these new changes to your program? So I do want a final takeaways. What are the golden nuggets from each of our guests today? So let's start with Sherry, and then we'll go to Chad and Charles.
Well, I would say use your travel spin to design your travel program around your people, especially your top performers and most frequent travelers. Reward the right behaviors, improve the travel experience, and actually reduce costs. The key is being intentional, apply flexibility where it drives value, and use the booking tool to guide decision making with minimal administrative effort.
Excellent. All right, Chad.
My takeaway would be the fact that this is a journey. You're going to have ups and downs. I talked about some of those today in my section, but keep your end goal in mind and team up. Get your local advocates involved. Get your senior leadership involved. Get audit. You know, the chief security officer, as Charles was saying, the more people you have at the party, the easier it's going to be for you. So remember, it's a journey. Remember your final focus and get more people involved.
And just riffing off of what Chad and Sherry said, again, tailor that program to your travelers' requirements and needs. Understand those personas and build policies that reflect what they do, how they do it, and when they do it in terms of travel and their job. And then lastly, on the topic of deglobalization, again, one size does not fit all. You really need to be able to build a customized program based upon the unique needs that you have in each point of sale that you do business with. So really look at that as finding the best solution for each of your markets, but don't give up on the governance, policy, and security aspects when you do that.
Thank you, guys. This is a passionate industry. You know, our travelers are passionate. Our partners are passionate. We are passionate. Our executives and executive admins are passionate. It's about the traveler experience management. And it's about how we collectively make it happen. So I want to thank you all so much, not just the speakers, but definitely our speakers, but all of you for listening and those that will be listening later. This is an area that we need to be together on. We need to partner on, and we're here to help you along that, whether it's the journey or the optimization or just relevant, practical ways to approach change.
That wraps up this episode of Your Window Seat. We hope these discussions on policy agility and the trend toward deglobalization have given you a fresh perspective on structuring your travel program for today's environment. As global complexity increases, the path forward isn't always about rigid standardization. It's about knowing when a more regional, flexible approach can drive better results. We hope these practical strategies guide you away from merely reacting to change toward truly evolving with it. A special thank you to our panel of industry experts, Sherry Gagliano, Chad Ish, and Charles Bacharach, for sharing their invaluable insights and real-world strategies. And, of course, thank you for listening to this episode of Your Window Seat, hosted by Travel Incorporated. To learn more about how we can help you navigate these shifts, visit us at travelinc.com or follow us on LinkedIn. We look forward to seeing you at the next episode, and as always, from all of us at Travel Incorporated, safe travels.